Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
All right, so in terms of why are we here right now? Last night, the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, issued an order that the entire state of California stay at home. That order went into effect at midnight, and of course, that's designed to slow the spread of the coronavirus. This is not local news or even national news. This, of course, is global news. California is the most populous state in the U.S., also the first to issue such an order. And I want to make sure to discuss it right here on the program, since, as you know, this show is based in California. And you might be wondering why we're here. You might be wondering what this means to us. I want to be very, very clear about this. We respect the decree of every governor who makes the decision on what's best for the residents of their state in this fight to keep their citizens safe. Minimizing contact with others to eradicate this pandemic is one of the best things that we can all do, as are all of the other CDC guidelines that are being suggested. Radio and television stations are just two of the essential businesses that are not being closed under this decree. There are other services and businesses that are deemed essential as well. Of course, our first responders and those working at hospitals and in medical facilities lead that list. And a big thank you to everybody. A big thank you to every one of those dedicated individuals. There are others as well who are helping to keep things going and moving, like those who work at gas stations, supermarkets, banks, media outlets, pet supply stores, convenience stores, hardware stores, auto mechanic facilities. We appreciate what you're doing and providing. The same is true of plumbers, electricians, auto mechanics, taxi drivers, transportation providers. You're all appreciated by us so much for continuing to provide the services that you are. Here in our studio, we are here just long enough to provide this program and stay connected with all of you. We have further minimized the staff here to bare bones. We have implemented more measures to not come into contact with anybody. We have ramped up our cleaning protocols even more than normal. And when this program is not on, we are all at home. We are not going anywhere. We are not leaving. We're not doing anything other than being with family. Now, in the coming days and weeks, you may hear and see even more differences with the way we make this program. We may determine that creating this program from home is possible, and we may connect remotely. And it might be the right thing to do. We are looking at that right now. We are working on that right now. I would reiterate, though, while we work for a network, we do not work at a network. Our space is very different. While we work for radio stations, we do not work at a radio station. We are self-contained. We are our own building, our own outfit. And we take this situation extremely seriously. And if you've listened to the program at all in the past month, you know this is not something we just came to. This is not an overnight mindset. We've been taking this extremely seriously for a long time, and we will continue to do so. For now, the state has allowed us to be here. Our office space has allowed us to be here. Our size of our staff has allowed us to be here. Our heightened protocol has allowed us to be here. And we feel extremely fortunate for the opportunity that we have. And as long as we have the opportunity, we will continue to respect it and appreciate it and deliver the best program that we can, while we can, until that changes. So we are here, 1-800-636-8686. We are here, and that's why we're here, and we'll stay here as long as we can. If you would like to share your thoughts on any of the above, go ahead. In the meantime, we are going to do the show, and there is lots to talk about. In terms of the coronavirus, Celtics guard Marcus Smart says that he tested positive for COVID-19. He says that he was tested 5 days ago, and he got his results last night. Meanwhile, two members of the Lakers have tested positive as well. The team did not release the names of the players who did, only that they were tested on Wednesday, and they received their results a day later. Remember, the Lakers had their players tested after four Brooklyn Nets tested positive for COVID-19 on Tuesday. The Nets were the last team the Lakers played March 10th at Staples. Meanwhile, in the NFL, Saints head coach Sean Payton tested positive for COVID-19 as well. He said that he did not feel well Sunday. He took the test Monday. He received the results on Thursday, but he remains upbeat, and he's optimistic for a full recovery. We are joined once again by Mark Pope. Mark, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
Jim, happy to be here, man. Great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you. So you've had some time to think about it and process the entire thing. So I'm curious, Mark, what kind of thoughts and emotions have you had over the past week or so?
I don't even know where to start.
Sure.
I'll tell you this. It crossed my mind last night that I'm really a sick man. Don't have any idea how to heal myself. Because I literally am on pins and needles watching Joe Lunardi post his bracket winners. What is wrong with me?
I got you.
I'm actually stressed out about the game that he's prognosticated us playing tomorrow. So, I think it's in our blood, and I think that we find all kinds of ways to cope with it. So, the nice thing is that we get to kind of mentor these kids through this and try and help them find their way, and that's what we're all trying to do right now.
That's a wild story. Mark Pope joining us. All right, so TJ Haws talked about how the team came back from the conference tournament in Vegas and then came in and had a workout, and at that point the rumors were flying around that the NCAA tournament would proceed without fans. What do you remember about that day?
It was a bad day in our locker room. So we were actually meeting. We had just watched some film. We had actually we're actually talking about specifics about the coronavirus. We had put together a little PowerPoint to share with our guys just to make sure they were educated. And, of course, we had heard that we're going to play without fans. So we had talked about this all in this meeting. We're dressed and taped and ready to go to practice. And my assistant coach, Cody Feger, kind of leaned over and as I was talking to the guys and held up his phone and we saw the announcement that they canceled the tournament. And listen, for sure, we understand the global importance and impact of what's going on, right? So there's no doubt that it was the right call, none at all. But that doesn't diminish the pain that these guys felt having really dedicated their lives, especially specifically the last 4 and for some of my guys 5 years, to try and finally get back to this tournament. It meant that much to them. They were getting up at 5:30 in the morning to come to 2-a-days and had been chasing it for years. And so in our locker room in that moment, there were a lot of tears and there was a lot of really uncomfortable silence, and we just let it marinate with our guys for a little bit, and then just the only thing we could do at that moment was kind of express to them how much we love them. But for a team that had worked so hard all year to stake claim to the best locker room in America, that was a really dark locker room for a minute there.
I get that. BYU head coach Mark Pope is joining us. So you try to process that and you try and help them through that. And then on Sunday, you tweet out this great video with the voices of Greg Gumbel, Clark Kellogg, and Seth Davis simulating what Selection Sunday would have been like for you and what they would have said about your team. Where did the idea come from and how pleased were you with the result?
I had met Friday with each of my players, kind of individual meetings. We'll do that several times now, doing a postseason autopsy. And TJ Haws, and of course my guys are still super emotional. And TJ Haws, one of the things he said to me that was so telling Friday morning was he was just like, I'm just dreading Sunday. He's like, I am dreading Sunday. Because he thought he had it. He said I spent my whole life dreaming of, our name being called. He was pretty emotional, actually. And he had, he'd fallen short for 3 straight years and then finally got it. And it just stuck in my head how much he was dreading Sunday, right? And so Seth Davis is great to us. And Clark Kellogg, I've known Clark forever. He actually did a post game interview with me, the first game of my senior year in college, and I was like, this is the coolest cat I've ever met, right? So, I mean, they are, they're really the voices that we all have indelibly associated our minds with Selection Sunday, and so reached out to them, and they were willing to do it. And then our you know, our guys here at, so they just sent me little voiceovers, and then our guys here at BYU, our media department is so unbelievable. So they threw it together, and you know, we just do the best we can, right? That's what we do. And so, given the circumstances, that was the best we could do, and it wasn't real, but it was everybody as close to real as we could get. And I think at the end of the day, our guys appreciated it.
I was going to say, I love it. I think it's a great idea. What did the players make of it when they saw it? How did they react?
I think they had mixed feelings. I think there was part of them that, like, ripped their heart out. But I think in the long run, I think it was really good. And honestly, I think it was really cathartic for our fans, too. Like, our fans care. This BYU Nation, they really, really care. And their heart and souls are in this with us, too. And so I think it's, you know, maybe a little bit cathartic for all of us. And hopefully that was what it did.
If staying on top of your budget and protecting your home are goals for this year, then you want to take a look at American Home Shield. American Home Shield gives you a plan when stuff breaks down in your home. I'm talking about the not so easy to fix, sometimes pretty expensive stuff, like your refrigerator, heating and air conditioning, plumbing and electrical. And believe me, when it happens, not if, but when it happens, you are really going to appreciate American Home Shield. To see all they cover and save $50, you want to go to ahs.com/Rome. That's ahs.com/Rome. If American Home Shield cannot repair the covered item, they'll replace it or offer an alternative solution. As the nation's largest provider, they have paid more in home warranty claims than any other company. That's added up to more than $2 billion in the last 5 years. America's most preferred home warranty, more than 1.8 million customers. Limitations and exclusions do apply. See plan for details. American Home Shield. Be sure with the shield. BYU head coach Mark Pope is joining us. You know, Mark, when you look at that senior class, you've got guys like Yoeli Childs, TJ Hawes, Jake Toulson, who arrived as a grad transfer, and more. How much have they meant to you and to the program?
Well, they made my job really easy. In moments, they made me look like a way smarter coach than I really am. So those are the great things. The best thing, you know, you hear everybody, you know, every single coach, every single CEO, everybody who takes over a new organization, they talk about, you know, establishing a culture and building a culture and all those things. And what a gift. I mean, what a gift it is for us at BYU in this basketball program, me specifically, that we got to start off trying to establish a culture here with the leadership that those guys gave. And the wins were epic, and the trajectory of our season was really special, but the tone they set every single day in practice, the way they believed in community and sacrificing for each other in a locker room, the way they instilled that in our team and our program, what a gift, right? Talk about seniors stepping up and growing a culture is pretty special. So that's going to be their legacy, not just this great season they put together, but the way they showed us how to do it.
BYU head basketball coach Mark Pope joining me for a few more moments. It was an amazing year. You know, when we talked last month, we talked about the challenge that you were taking on when it came to being the guy to follow Dave Rose. Roughly 11 months after you were named head coach at BYU, what do you maybe know about this job, or what do you appreciate about the job that you did not know from your time as an assistant?
Well, I think probably everybody that, you know, it's just a different job being an assistant head coach. One is, you know, every single day I get my respect for coach and what he did here grows. Every day it grows. He did it better than anybody I probably ever will do it here at BYU. And you get to see the challenges that he faced every day. But I think the thing that's growing on me is, you know, when I took this job, I thought, you know, this will be a really special place to win. If we can win here, it's going to be really special. And that's just been multiplied. It's not easy. It's not easy to win anywhere, right? If we can win here and win consistently and win in a big way, like Coach Rose did and the coaches that came before him did, if we can do it and even maybe find some incredible way to do it at a, you know, a higher level in moments, it just means so much to people. This community just envelops this team and embraces it, and we literally do feel like we're all in this together for good and for bad. And so I think that's the one thing, being, you know, sitting in this chair for a year now, that's the one thing that has become epically clear to me is, It matters. It matters that this team is good. It matters that this team is inspiring to this community. It matters the way we carry ourselves and the way we perform, and that's a huge responsibility. But it's a gift for us to be able to take a swing at it for a while.
Mark Pope joining us. So leave me with a thought. You've been talking about this now for a minute or so, but when you think about the future and you think about the next steps with the program, what should BYU fans remember about the 2019-2020 squad?
Listen, I think the takeaway, the identity of this team is they sacrifice for each other in a time in sports when it, you know, not just in sports, in our society, when it's, you know, when it's iPhones and everything, right? You had a bunch of guys that got to a point where they said, hey, all we care about is this team winning. I think our fans could feel it. I think when you watch this as a product on the floor, you could see it. I think when you look at the metrics of how we performed, especially offensively, you can't miss it, right? That these guys came and sacrificed each other and gave for each other for something that was bigger than themselves. I think that's becoming increasingly rare. I mean, listen, I don't want to wax poetic here, but one of the most extraordinary things about how the world seems to be trying to grapple with this pandemic right now is that really all these sacrifices people are making, for the most part, you know, in my uneducated opinion, we're making the sacrifices for each other. You know, I think there's a lot of people that aren't super nervous about, you know, what their experience is going to be like having the coronavirus, but they are experienced about kind of the worldwide spread of this disease. And I think when you see in these rare instances, when you see people come together and do something for someone, for something bigger than just their own self-interest, I think we're all drawn to that. And I think that was the identity of this team. This team was way more interested in the well-being of the team than they were about their own agendas.
So glad you made that point. And it's so true in watching that team from the outside. BYU had an amazing year, 24-8, 13-3 in conference. Number 16 in the coaches poll. Their first year head coach is Mark Pope. I had to bring you back, Mark. I'm so glad for your thoughts. Thanks for sharing them. Let's make sure we do it again. And thanks for doing the show.
Hey, listen. Yeah, you know, take this for what it is, man, but your job might be more important than ever before. And I just say that in the sense of, like, this, you know, we're not in a, like, mental health is an issue right now, and we were created not to be social distancing creatures, right? We're created to, like, be together. And so the fact that you could be on the show and bring everybody together every day is really important, man. We're super grateful for it.
Let's go to the phones. I want to finish that thought on Tom Brady, but I do want to get you involved. And I did mention this was the best time to call us, so let's do it right now. We go to Tobin in Chapel Hill. It's good to have you. Tobin, how are you?
Good, man. Close feelings and good health to you and yours, Rome.
Thank you very much, Tobin.
I want to expound on the obvious, and then I have a larger point. You know, we all know that this thing is way bigger than sports, but I'm in an unprecedented state of shock as a sports fan here. I mean, we have a year where the Sisters of the Poor could make the Final Four. You could make a case for maybe 12 NHL teams to make a run of the Cup. And the NBA is just a mountain of matchups and drama leading probably to LeBron and Giannis. And I just can't believe what's happening here. I mean, you know, you can only walk the dog so many times, you know. No banners, no Stanley, no Larry. I think I'm going to turn in my cable box a season early. So my larger point is, let me echo Mark Pope and what everybody else is thinking today, and that is thank you. Thank you and the XR4TI for continuing to put out a professional quality sports program that's topical and relevant and a lot of fun to listen to. And, you know, you're more important than ever right now. And not to go Marty on you, but, you know, we need your content. We need your voice. We need the jungle now more than ever. So war having your college-age kids home close to you where you can help them out if they need them. War clones.
Tobin, Chapel Hill. Thank you, Tobin. All right, so more telephone calls coming up in a minute, but I want to say yesterday I talked about Darius Slay and the trade from Detroit to Philadelphia. Yesterday, Darius Slay also talked about the trade from Detroit to Philadelphia, and my man did not hold anything back. He told the Detroit Free Press that his relationship with the head coach, Matt Patricia, was broken and that did play a role in that trade. And he said it went back to an incident in training camp back in 2018 during Patricia's first season. Let me preface this by saying there are a number of quotes from Slay coming up, and each one is incredible. Are you ready? And check this. Slay told the Free Press that in Patricia's first training camp, quote, he told me in front of the whole team, in the team meeting room, showed clips of me in practice getting a ball caught on me, or so in practice. He posted a picture of a wide receiver on social media, and he told me, stop bleeping this man's private. So I'm like, whoa. I'm like, hold up. Where I'm from, that don't fly. Because I wouldn't say that to him. I wouldn't say to him to stop you-know-what to Bill Belichick. I wouldn't do that. That's just me as a man. That's disrespectful to me. And so from there on, it was done with. End quote. My reaction to that story is like, whoa, hold up now. I mean, seriously, Matt Patricia is pulling crap like that. Matt Patricia is doing that. Matt Patricia, in his first NFL training camp as a head coach, is running that kind of garbage at Darius Slay. Slay was pissed. And as you can imagine, he said it was a good thing that Glover Quinn was sitting next to him. Quote, I ain't gonna say I was ready to fight because of the fact that I just really kind of blacked out a little bit and really asked myself, did this man just say this to me? And like I said, with GQ not sitting beside me in a team meeting room, there's no telling what could have happened. Honestly, because the fact that I couldn't believe it, and from where I'm from, stuff gets said like that, a lot of stuff happens. And GQ sat there and was like, nah, calm down, Slay. Calm down, Slay. You know where it's going. End quote. Slay also says that former Lions running backs coach David Walker approached him and tried to explain what Patricia was trying to do. Quote, I was real teary-eyed because I got real, real mad. And he was like, Slay, man, he's just trying to set the tone for the team. That's some stuff don't go. He don't like social media, so he's trying to post it, make it calm social media down because a lot of us like social media. End quote. All right, so I get the coaches don't like guys being on social media. But coaches need to adjust to that, especially if you're Matt Patricia and you've never been a head coach in your entire life. I know you want to send a message. I know you want to prove how tough you are. I know you want to let everybody know you're in charge and what a badass you are. But if you don't have a track record to point to as a head coach and you're running that kind of garbage at your players, you are asking for trouble. What a great way to lose the locker room before you even have it. Slay continued, quote, I said, man, I wasn't trying to hear that because of the fact that I'm a grown man. He's a grown man. Like I said, I wasn't saying nothing like that to him to disrespect him like that. I wasn't trying to disrespect that man in no way because I respect him as a man, but I felt there was no mutual respect as a man, but he respect me as a player, end quote. So again, to circle back, you show up in your first training camp as head coach and you're going to go in? You're going to go after a Pro Bowl corner like that? Yeah, well, it sure as hell didn't work with Slay. Slay said, quote, your first impression always, your best impression. Like I said, I would never disrespect him in that way. And for him to be able to tell me, I'm out here bleeping another man's crank because of a picture I post, I ain't like that. And it took me a whole nother level. End quote. I mean, that's absolutely insane. But there's more. That's not all. There was the time that Slay worked out with Richard Sherman, Aqib Talib, and Xavier Rhodes in the offseason. Patricia didn't like that either, according to Slay. Slay says, quote, he told me out of his mouth, he said, those are elite guys. You're not elite. You're a good player, but they are elite. And Sherman's smart. He used you. He tried to say that Sherm used me to know what Marvin Jones do. I said he can find out what Marvin Jones do watching film. That ain't got nothing to do with me. What am I going to tell him? I don't know the offense. I know route combinations, but I ain't going to know the offense. End quote. So this guy rolls into Detroit without a single head coaching win, not one win to his name. And he's taking runs at elite talent, and he's trolling his own guys left and right. I thought this guy was a rocket scientist, like a literal rocket scientist, but he's showing up and doing things that dumb. A literal rocket scientist who shows up and thinks that that's the right move. Man, read the room, doofus. Read the nameplate on your office door, doofus. It says Matt Patricia, not Bill Belichick. And just because you work for Bill Belichick does not mean you are Bill Belichick. I'm not saying Darius Slay was 100% in the right, but I am saying that if you're Matt Patricia and you do something like he allegedly did, you better have something to back it up with. And winning 9 games in 2 seasons is not backing it up. According to the Free Press, Patricia meant that comment figuratively and released a statement through a team spokesperson. Quote, over the last 2 seasons, Darius and I have had multiple conversations in private that I believe were constructive and satisfactory. My discussions with athletes are confidential. I won't comment on anything discussed with our players in a team meeting. I appreciate his hard work, and I wish he and his family all the success in Philadelphia. End quote. Yeah, that's not exactly a denial of what happened. In fact, that's nowhere near a denial. One anonymous Lions source told the Free Press that Slay was, quote, a major cancer last season, and that he would sit in meetings and not pay attention, and then go into the locker room and tell other players how the coaches are all full of bleep. End quote. I mean, they won 3 games last year. I don't know if the coaches are full of bleep, but they're not full of dubs. They're certainly not full of wins. And then for his part, Slay told the Free Press, quote, they probably got a different side of me if he ain't say what he said. How he approached me, I approach him, so I approach him different. If he wasn't coaching me, I don't want to hear too much on what you got to say. So if you're not trying to help me build my game up to help me become a better player for this team, I don't want to hear it. I don't need you really asking me about how my family's doing. I don't really need you to ask me about my kids and stuff. I don't want that because you done disrespected me and I ain't really trying to hear it. End quote. In other words, that backfired on him. That backfired on Patricia. That first impression was his only chance to make a good impression, and it backfired badly. So what do we have at the end of all these incredible quotes from Slay? What you have is a 3-time Pro Bowl corner being traded to another NFC team. Darius Slay has as many Pro Bowls as Matt Patricia had wins last season. And if that Patricia act sounds familiar, it's because it is. It sure seems like it's pretty much the same playbook that Bill O'Brien is running with the Texans. His approach with making it personal with great players and then sending them out and getting pennies on the dollar in return. You know what it sounds like? It sounds like the approach of their mentor, Bill Belichick. Except Belichick has the resume. Belichick has 6 Lombardis. When you have a fistful of rings, you can take a run at players because you've already earned that respect. Belichick wins. These 2 dudes don't. And certainly not nearly enough to be making things personal with their most talented players and then running them out of town. Maybe if you have more than a pencil behind your ear to your name, you can do that. But Matt Patricia is not in that spot right now. And this guy's not done nearly enough to say things like that to his team and then run guys off and get nothing in return. Cam Dantzler is my guest. Cam, it's good to have you on. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, good. So it's been a few weeks since the combine. Before we get to the details of the combine, what was your mindset going into the combine, and what was the experience like for you overall?
I mean, it was a great experience. You know, got to meet a lot of different coaches, learn different defenses, and it was a great experience for me.
you know, you worked pretty hard to get ready for that thing, and then when you ran a 4.640, which was not what you planned, and it's not a good representation of your speed. It's just not. So when you look back on that, what kind of thoughts do you have?
First, I had going into the run, I had hamstring problems, but I'm a competitor, so I feel like me going to the combine, I just had to do something. So, you know, I just got to the line, and, you know, took medicine to make my body feel good because, you know, when I do something, I want to do it to my best of my ability. But, you know, I just like to compete, and I just feel like it was just a great shot for me to go out there and show what I can do. And a 4.6 was shocking. I know I'm faster than that, but I was waiting on my pro day for March 26th, but that got canceled. So I'm just going to, you know, take it day by day until everything dies down.
I respect that. I respect your decision to run. I respect the way you handled that. So what about that? Like, your pro day was going to be on March 26th. Obviously, you want to show everybody what you can do. But because you can't do that, how do you go about making sure the teams know how good you are and just what they're going to get if they take you?
I just feel like, you know, film speaks for itself. I've never been beat on a deep ball. You know, holding guys like Henry Ruggs, Jamar Chase. You know, I'm toe-to-toe with some of the top guys in the country. So I just feel like the film speaks for itself.
Cam Dantzler is joining us. Now, you've been working out and training at IMG. What's that been like, and what's a normal day like for you?
It was a great experience, you know, just being there to have all the tools to get you prepared for the next level. We have a schedule that sent out in our calendars each and every day, so you really know what's going on and what you got to do, where you got to be. So it's just, I feel like everything there is really, you know, really into good details and have you, like, prepared for the next level.
Cam Dantzler is joining us. You know, Cam, one of the things from watching you is that a lot of corners don't necessarily like to hit or tackle. You seem to really enjoy that. Where does that physicality and that attitude come from?
When I was younger, I had this story. When I was younger, I was 5 years old. I started playing when I was five. Played for my uncle team, and this guy named Deshaun, he ran me over when I was little. You know, I quit. So, you know, then my dad came home from work one afternoon, and I heard his truck. So I'm like, I'm going to get in trouble. So I went on the porch, and my dad, you know, he was like, why you not at practice? And I was like, you know, they hitting too hard. And he gave me a little pep talk, and, you know, ever since then, I just became physical because I was always the underdog. I was always smaller than everybody else. So I feel like I just play with a chip on my shoulder.
Hey, Cam, he gave you a little pep talk or he gave you a little talking too? Like, what did Pop say?
He was like, hey, you signed up for it. This is what you wanted. You say you wanted to, you know, be active. So he was like, I know you're small. Just, you know, do whatever you got to do to take them down. So, you know, you're hitting the ankles. It was like they can't run without their legs. And, you know, me being five, I'm like, yeah, you're right. So ever since then, you know, I've been hitting people low, just doing anything to bring somebody down.
It's funny how it all works out too, Cam. You're not small anymore. Nobody would say that about you anymore. So you were a number of different positions in high school. When you were being recruited, what was it about Mississippi State that made you feel like that was the place for you?
Well, Coach Mullen, he was the guy that, you know, that was recruiting me, him, Coach Knox, Coach Deshae. I just felt like being there just felt like home. You know, they was comparing me to Jonathan Banks. So I just felt like being in that organization was the best fit for me. And at the end of the day, it was. I made a great decision by going to Mississippi State. It's just a family atmosphere.
Cam, there's one more coach that you did not mention that I have to mention. If you play DB at Mississippi State, that means that you're coached by the great Terrell Buckley. It's my guy now, T-Buck. Going back to when I used to have him on this show when he was a player, what was it like to play for T-Buck?
It was a blessing. You know, having a guy in your corner like that that played in the league for several years, he was a great mentor to not even just me, but the other guys around me. It was not all about football with him. It was about life. So, just, you know, he's just like another father figure to all of us. And, you know, he's a technician type of guy. You know, that was the main focus. You know, he knew the game, and he, you know, he just preached what he knew to us.
Hey, Cam, the best part about it, though, that was not enough for T-Buck. I know T-Buck. Like, he was going to preach what he knew, and he was going to share with you. But I had a chance to reconnect with him in December after he went into the College Hall of Fame. He told me that he would coach you guys and that he reminded all of you that he didn't just make plays. He was a playmaker. And not only did he say that, he broke out film to prove it and showed you all film of himself. What was it like watching him and watching his film?
Watching him, so we always joke around when we was like, Coach, half of the time you was playing this big skill. He was like, hey, I didn't guard this for Hall of Famers. You know, he was a guy that was, you know, very confident in what he do. So, you know, just him being confident just made me more confident in what I do. So, like he told all of us, you know, you have to have swagger and confident to play corner. You know, you gotta be a playmaker. It's not about what you like. Say if I made a good play, he was like, "That's not good enough. Make it a great play." He always, you know, preach on us to be better, be a better on us. So I just feel like, just, you know, like I said, having him in our corner was just a blessing.
Cam, I wish you knew the T-Buck that I knew, because, like, he's a man of faith. He's a great mentor. He's so great, dude. Mm-hmm. But his confidence and his swagger was absolutely off the chart. Man, I hate to date myself, Cam, but I literally interviewed him when he was coming out of college. You would not believe the things that he would say and then going back up on the field. He was incredible. He was so great. Before I let you go, you were talking about, you were tweeting that you would watch film on Darius Slay, and you mentioned Richard Sherman and Jalen Ramsey. After Slay was traded, you tweeted, "Congrats, big bro. Appreciate you for always motivating me and putting me on the game. As one Mississippi State DB looking at another, how much does Slay mean to you?"
He means a lot. You know, after the combine, you know, he called me. He was like, "Hey, bro, don't worry about that. You know, film speaks for itself." You know, because I was kind of down. I wasn't expecting to run a 4.6. I know I'm better than that. I know I'm faster than that. So I was kind of down a little bit, but, you know, I still, you know, kept my head up because, you know, I just kept, you know, having that hunger mentality, you know. Flew back to Florida and started back working. So, you know, just having Slay in your corner, you know, he gave me tips on the game. He came to Mississippi State. We worked out for a little bit. You know, he just, you know, better my game in some aspects. You know, he taught me to the 6-inch step. Well, not just him and Coach Buckley taught me the 6-inch step, but, you know, just having him around to mentor me. It was a blessing because, you know, like I said, he just, you know, gave me tips and pointers on, you know, the next level.
It's a big Slay house right here. I love the guy. I really do love the guy. All right, so Cam, bottom line, what is an NFL team going to get when they draft you?
An NFL team that drafts me, they're going to get a winner. The guy's going to come in every day willing to work. You know, they're going to get a corner that can do all aspects of the game. You know, press, zone, tackle, anything they need me to do, blitz. They're going to get a guy that's, you know, hungry to win.
Cam Dance was my guest. One last thought. Not that you need more motivation, but last May you became a father. What was it like when Cam Jr. was born? How much are you enjoying fatherhood?
Oh, I love it. He's very active now. You know, he's moving around a lot. And, you know, just having him, just when he first became born, it was a blessing. And that just, you know, gave me another reason to you know, go harder and do what I do. So just having him just motivated me and pushed me each and every rep in the weight room, off-season grind, practice, like everything I did, I thought about him.
The Back Roads of March is out right now. John Feinstein is my guest. John, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
Jim, it's good to talk to you. I appreciate it. And am I still the only guy who was on back-to-back shows as a guest, or has that been usurped in the years since then?
To the best of my knowledge, you are one of one and the only one, but certainly the first. Certainly the first.
Well, that's an honor. And I will gladly carry that with me. Although, you probably know that when people find out I'm going to be on the show, the first thing they ask is if Bridget's going to be playing the drums.
Oh, I know that. They've already tweeted me about that, and I've already replayed the sound. So I do know, and I understand that clearly, John. It's good to have you back. So you and I have been talking for decades now, John, and you've been around sports, college basketball in particular, for a long, long time. What's it like for you to be in March without the NCAA tournament?
I think it's for me like it is for millions. It's strange. I guess the difference is that most people yesterday, today, even Tuesday and Wednesday night with the games in Dayton would be watching on television somewhere. I would be watching from press row somewhere and trying to figure out what my column for that day would be, what it might be for the next day. As a reporter, I always enjoyed covering the NCAA tournament because it was fun to search for the story that everybody wasn't writing. That's what I like to do, Jim. You've known me, as you said, for 100 years, and you know that about me, and that's what the new book is really about. But I always enjoyed that, especially the first weekend when you'd have teams playing who nobody knew anything about. I mean, nobody even knew what UMBC stood for before they beat Virginia 2 years ago. Those stories like that, a Loyola of Chicago, which would not have made the field as an at-large if it hadn't won the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament 2 years ago, going to the Final Four, and Sister Jean becoming a national hero in a period of about 10 days. That's what I love about the NCAA tournament. So even though it's great to talk to you right now, frankly, I'd rather be at a basketball game.
John Feinstein joining us. I concur. So college basketball is very much, John, of course, about the Blue Bloods, Duke, Kentucky, North Carolina. But it's also, as you mentioned, about all these small schools. What about the Back Roads to March? The book is out right now. For those who do not know, what is the book about and why did you want to write that book?
It's a great question, Jim, and it really goes back to my early days as a reporter, first in college, then when I got out of college at the Washington Post. Back then, covering college basketball was actually very intimate. You could walk into a practice anytime you wanted. To nowadays, you try to walk into a big-time practice, you probably need a court order to get in there. You could go in the locker rooms before, after practice, talk to players at length. You could get to know coaches, sitting with them at a bar on the road or anywhere, or in their offices or anywhere. And I loved that. And even back then, I loved looking for that story that nobody else was writing. I think to some degree, I've had the chance to write about most of the big names in sports, really, in the last 40 years, particularly in basketball, and enjoyed it. But the stories I love the most have always been the ones where somebody finishes reading it and says, I didn't know that. And that's what the Back Roads to March was about. I wanted to go back to those reporting roots. I knew that there were great stories at the mid-major level, even lower than that. Jim Calhoun going back to coach at Division III as one example of being lower than that. I knew I'd have a good time, and I thought I could find enough good stories to write a good book. And I believe I did. I did drive a lot of back roads, Jim. I was in Buies Creek, North Carolina. I was in Farmville, Virginia. I was in a lot of places most people have never heard of. And enjoyed the heck out of it.
I was going to say, that's what you love. John Feinstein joining us. The book is called The Back Roads to March. It's out right now. You know, I'm going to pick my spots, John. There's so many good things in this book that I could ask you about. In a lot of ways, though, the book is about Bjorn Broman. For those who do not know, who is that and why is he special to you?
You know, I mentioned Buies Creek, North Carolina, and that is where Campbell University is located, the Campbell Camels. And if you ever get there, make sure you get your picture taken outside with the camel. That sits right outside the Pope Arena on campus. And the Big South tournament was held there last year because Campbell was the number one seed. And there's a great story about that. A kid named Chris Clemens, who was 5'9", is 5'9", wanted to play in the ACC. Nobody recruited him from the ACC. So he ended up going to Campbell and becoming the fourth leading all-time scorer in the NCAA. But during that first day at the Big South tournament, I was watching a game between Charleston Southern and Winthrop. And Charleston Southern was winning rather decisively. And in the last few minutes, I noticed this kid, Bjorn Broman, who was just diving at every loose ball, making backdoor cuts, setting hard screens, doing everything he could to give his team a chance at a last-gasp comeback, which did not happen. And after the game, I went to talk to him. And I said to him, you know, you made a backdoor cut with about 15 seconds to go to cut the gap to 14. You were still going as hard as you possibly could. What was that about? And he said, I've played basketball all my life, and I knew this was my last game. This was the last time I was going to play at this sort of competitive level. I'm not going to be a pro. I'm not that good, but I wanted to play every second I could. And that last backdoor cut, Jim, gave him exactly 1,000 career points.
Hmm.
So he could tell his kids someday, hey, I scored 1,000 points in Division I college basketball. I played in an NCAA tournament as a sophomore, which he did. He was a good player, not a great player, obviously. But to me, his approach to the game symbolized what I was trying to do in this book, along with the famous sign in the Palestra that to me isn't famous enough. When you walk onto the concourse at the Palestra, you see a small plaque that says, to win the game is great, to play the game is greater, but to love the game is the greatest of all. And I know my wife rolls her eyes when I say that and talks about how corny I am. But I love that sign, I love what it means, and I love the players like Bjorn Broman and many others that I got to write about in this book who sort of symbolize what that sign means.
John, not to spread even more corn throughout, but in effect, how much of this book is, in effect, a love letter to college basketball?
It is. No, that's a perfect description, Jim, because you know how much I love college hoops. And I grew up with it in New York City. I used to ride the subway up to Columbia when Columbia was good, believe it or not, in the late 60s and early 70s. I used to go to the doubleheaders at Madison Square Garden where you could get in for $2 and then sneak down into the red seats because the building was usually a half or a third full. Again, I love the intimacy of the game. I was never very good at it. I played it very hard, like Bjorn Broman, only I wasn't nearly as good as he was. But love the game and love what the game has meant to me personally. And that's hard to explain. I try to explain it to some degree in the book, but basketball has always been there for me. I've done a lot of different things. I've been a police reporter. I've been a political reporter. And I've covered other sports, as you know, because you've had me on for just about every nonfiction book I've ever written. And I always come back to basketball in one form or another. A few years ago, it was the book I did on Dean Smith and Mike Krzyzewski and Jim Valvano, because I was lucky enough to cover them in the 80s when I was at the Post and get to know them as well as I did. And yet I always, and so no matter what, I end up back at basketball. I'm sure this won't be my last basketball book. I knock wood and when I say that. But I can honestly say I never had more fun than doing this book. And one funny story that you'll appreciate, I mentioned Farmville, Virginia. That's where Longwood University is located for the 99.9% of your listeners who probably don't know, understandably. I went to see Griff Aldrich, who's now the coach at Longwood, who played Division III ball, went to law school, got very rich practicing law for 20 years in Houston, and then gave it all up to go work for Ryan Odom when Ryan Odom, his college roommate, got hired at UMBC.
Amazing.
And was was making $32,000 a year there as an assistant, as opposed to $800,000 a year as a lawyer. And UMBC upsets Virginia, gets the attention of the president of Longwood, who happened to also be a Virginia Law School grad, gets hired. And I went down to see him. They were playing High Point, which is now coached by Tubby Smith, whom 99.9% of your listeners do know, because he won a national championship at Kentucky. And Griff was talking the afternoon of the game about the fact that this is one of the great coaching matchups ever. Tubby with 606 wins in a national title, and Griff with 12 wins. Hmm. That night during the game, my wife texted me, as she will do, and said, where are you tonight, and when do you think you'll be home? So I texted back. I said, I'm in Farmville, Virginia. I'll be home about midnight. Text came right back. You're having an affair. There's no such place as Farmville, Virginia.
Funny.
So the chapter is called, Yes, Christine, There is a Farmville.
That is funny. John Feinstein joining us. What a great anecdote. Also, and so many stories in the book, John, but there is a story in the book that goes back to when you were at the National Sports Daily. You know, RIP to that. What a great, great publication that was.
Yeah.
Frank DeFord asked you to write a piece on the 8 best bench coaches in basketball and the 8 worst. You put Jim Boeheim on the worst list. How did he respond to that?
I put him at the top of the worst list. Yet.
Okay, right.
Let's get it straight.
Sure.
I mean, of all the dumb things I've written in my life, this might have been the dumbest. But number one on the best bench coach list was Bob Knight, which this was 1991, so pretty predictable. Number two was Dick Tarrant. You may remember him. He was the coach at Richmond,
yep,
who had tremendous success there. And I had Boeheim number one on the worst list. And Boeheim walked into the practices the day before the games, made a beeline for me, and started screaming at me in that shrieky voice of his, "You've got to be the worst basketball writer in history." And
Great. Went
ranted on and on. Well, as luck would have it, the next night, Richmond became the first, coached by Dick Tarrant, became the first number 15 seed to ever beat a number 2 seed in the NCAA tournament. And it was one of those games that ended after midnight. And Boeheim comes into the post-game press conference, and you can imagine his mood at that moment. And he doesn't go on the podium. He comes straight over to me, and he says, "You know what really pisses me off about this? Now there are going to be people out there who think you know something about basketball."
Oh, that's great.
And, of course, I couldn't have been more wrong. Jim Boeheim's one of the great coaches of all time. I had it completely wrong, but Dick Tarrant ended up making me look good.
Hey John, what about Boeheim going forward? So what happened? Like I had a thing with him that was not good, and then he came on the show and kind of gave it to me a little bit, and then it was fine. Yeah. I'm not going to say that, you know, it's good like it is with Coach K, you know,
right,
and you know the background of that. But like, right, how was it going forward with Boeheim after that moment between you and he?
He, like with you, in the sense that Jim can't hold a grudge.
Right. Right.
He's not a grudge holder. And the next time I wanted to talk to him was I was doing a piece on him for Sports Illustrated during 95-96, which turned out to be the year he went to the 2-3 zone, and that really changed his career in many ways. And he couldn't have been more cooperative. And he's played in the charity golf tournament that Tom Watson and I put on to raise money for ALS for years now. And we still have our fights. He still calls me every once in a while to tell me what an idiot I am. And he's probably right, again, most of the time. But Jim Boeheim can't hold a grudge. Some guys in sports, you know this firsthand, as do I, are grudge holders. Jim Boeheim is just not a grudge holder. And he and I have been, again, we can argue. You can argue, and you can too, argue with Jim Boeheim, disagree with Jim Boeheim, and he'll tell you why you're wrong. He'll tell you why you're an idiot. And then the next time you call him, he not only will he take your call, but he'll give you whatever you're asking him for, assuming it's reasonable.
Yeah, I can't even tell you how much I respect that, too. That's exactly how I find him to be. John Feinstein is the author of 36 books now. His latest effort is The Back Roads to March. Like all the others, it's a tremendous read. You probably have some more time on your hands right now. You should get this and you should see it. He is a New York Times bestselling author and a longtime friend of this program. John, I appreciate it so much. It's great to have you back. And thanks for your thoughts as always.
Hey, Jim, thanks for having me. I hope things are well with you and family. And it's always great to talk to you.
Welcome to the jungle. A very good Monday to you. My name is Jim Rome. We are live, as we always are, Monday through Friday, right in this time spot. Nice to have you here. I'm somewhat conflicted about what's going on. Like, you consider everything that's going on right now, it's kind of hard to get worked up about some of the news of the day. Y'all need to strap in. It's going to be a long ride. The new normal is upon us, and it's going to be like that for quite some time.
Everyone has a role to play as we face this challenge together.
Hey, man. Not affecting me. Not going to let the virus impact my St. Paddy's Day plans. It's about people with compromised immune systems. It's about the hospitals and making sure they don't get overwhelmed. It's about flattening the curve.
We just eat with whiskey and with Lulu. We have a good time.
He is Charles Robinson.
There is no better time to be hermetically sealed in your home than if you are a reporter during the opening of NFL free agency. Let me tell you.
Hey. Business is business. Nobody's bigger than anybody else. You don't believe me? Go ask Drew Bledsoe. Let me tell you something. Mumble, mumble. Business is business. Good luck there, Tommy. Good luck finding what you want.
Lorenzo Alexander joining us, talking about his former team, Stephon Diggs over from Minnesota.
I love it. His separation window is really going to allow Josh not to have to be 100% accurate, but be able to put the ball on him and make a lot of great plays.
Last time I checked, it was a 20% chance of rain. And if I'm doing my math correctly, is that not 5-1 odds? Pathetic? Maybe. I mean, is that a trade deal or a jackass stunt? My name is Bill O'Brien, and this is me blowing up my team and wrecking my generational quarterback's life, literally. That's what that deal is.
Mr. Boob, you know what?
What?
The ugliest horse's ass I've ever seen in my life is that thing below your lower lip. I'm out.
Daniel Jeremiah, TJ, what was your reaction to Arizona getting DeAndre Hopkins?
Dude, multifaceted reaction. First one was, what? Why did Houston not get more? Second point is, Jim, I'm so fired up for Kyler Murray.
Oh, wow, I ain't getting any younger. This is hard. Happy birthday. What's your name again? Arthur? Arthur. Hey, Artie, happy birthday to you, Artie. Everybody into the pattern. And I'm in the car riding to the stadium, and I'm like, holy and man, it's real. Like, I'm going to die, too. They're coming for me. And I'm like, they don't know that I've never played football, and I don't know the playbook. The phrase taking a dump does not need to be a part of that domain.
Tom Brady leaving the New England Patriots.
The greatest quarterback of all time is going to one of the most clowned teams of all time. The guy with 6 Super Bowl rings joins the franchise with 6 playoff wins. Fire the cannons. Raise the flag. Will Brinson.
I'm perfectly okay secluding in a bunker is what I do anyway. My son, we had to have a marathon Mega Man 2 session this morning.
Hell yeah, baby. Now I just need some Cracker Jack. Signed, Matt Nagy.
Why is it that the Bears can never, ever, ever, ever get a good quarterback?
So there's no toilet paper, but there's this many tissues left.
Tissue of the Kleenex variety are not flushable. Feels like my Butthole smoked in Newport.
Butthole.
He is Mike Piazza.
You guys went out last night and I'm starting today. You guys better get a hit. You guys better do well, so I'm going to kick your ass. We were like, what do we do now?
Hey, Rome.
I love when you talk.
Vodka. We're talking to Anthony Grant.
You know, you have a choice in terms of how you want to view things, and hopefully we'll choose to be grateful for what we did do as opposed to look and think what we didn't get a chance to do.
We're just living for the moment.
There's no way I'm going to hear something like that and not react to it.
At the end of the day, I'm not going to let it stop me from partying. You know, I've been waiting.
That's why you need to care. It's not about you, idiot. He is Tony Jefferson.
Back on the market, Jim.
In Lincoln. What's up, Geoff?
So I just want to let you know that my name is actually Jeff, not Geoff. You've been mispronouncing it for quite a while.
Geoff, you take that up with your parents. My guest is Jonathan Taylor.
Anywhere that I call home is somewhere that I would definitely love to be involved with. And now Madison, Wisconsin is another home. That's always a place I'll hold dear to my heart. Appreciate you having me on today. Always, bro. Thank you.
Let's keep in touch. Hope to talk soon. God bless.
Outro.
I'm butter, man.
My pleasure, Jim. You guys stay safe.
Let's team up to protect our health.
Give me a hell yeah.
Oh, yes.
Good night now. Good night now.